a different person altogether. Now you see, the common element of these verses, verses 17 to 22, is that although they're different, they're quite different people that are expressed in these verses, the common element is that their work and their influence is negative and destructive. That's the binding thread here. Their work and their influence is negative and destructive. They are people to be watched out for. Now take verse 17, the meddlesome troublemaker himself. He that passeth by and meddleth with strife belonging not to him is like one that taketh a dog by the ears. So the obvious idea, the obvious spirit of the verse is the spirit of interference, isn't it? The spirit of interfering. The Amplified Bible says, he who passing by stops to meddle with strife that is not his business. So you see, he was really actually walking by and he stops. Stops right in the middle of something and turns aside and interferes with something that wasn't his to interfere with in the first place. The Jerusalem Bible says, interfering in the quarrels of others. But the word meddleth here is actually, well, I think it actually means more than that, because it's only found on three occasions in the particular tense that it's found here. Now, let me show you the other two, because they're both in Proverbs. In chapter 14, we have, here are the three occasions where this word meddleth is found in this particular tense in the divine record. Only three times. Firstly, Proverbs 14 and verse 16. A wise man feareth and departeth from evil, but the fool rageth. Now you see that word rageth, that's our word. Rageth. Now what does that imply, by the way? It's a word that implies not just interference, but emotion, emotional involvement. He rages about the matter. The person is emotionally involved in this thing. Again in chapter 20 and verse 2. So Proverbs 20 verse 2 says, the fear of a king is as the roaring of a lion, whoso provoketh him to anger. And the words provoke to anger is the same Hebrew word used here. So it conveys the sense of emotional involvement, not just interference, but that the passions have been aroused. And likewise here now, in Proverbs 26 and verse 17, we have the third occasion that the word is translated, and here it's translated as meddleth. Although you'll notice in the Authorized Version margin that it says, is enraged. So Rotherham says, a passerby who gives vent to his wrath over a quarrel that is not his. He's emotionally involved in the matter, and yet it wasn't his business to begin with. So what's the parallel of the verse here? This business of the dog and the ears and all that sort of stuff. Well, I think firstly that the outburst of this person's emotion is like seizing and shaking a dog by the ears. And secondly, what sort of response is he going to get? Well, have you ever tried taking a dog by the ears? Shaking him by the ears. And this isn't any ordinary sort of dog. These are the dogs of Israel, the desert dogs. They were violent, nasty creatures, says the Psalms. They were snapping, biting, ferocious creatures. You just don't take this sort of thing by the ears. And the snarling response of such a dog would answer to the sort of response that a meddler would get when they interfere in a matter that's not theirs. In other words, they're lucky if they don't get their head bitten off. You see, this happens in ecclesial life sometimes, doesn't it? You know, you see a problem or a difficulty either with a family or with a couple or with this or that, and you think, I'm just itching to go and deal with that problem and sort it out. Any trouble is, it's not your business. Well, this is the person that forgets that it's not their business, and they get all fired up with passion and they steam into the situation. And the point is of the verse, of course, is that to interfere in the moment of irritation will tend to kindle rather than extinguish the problem. Wise kings know not to do that. Wise rulers understand that there is a time in life, in the truth, where even though you can see that a problem exists, you need to wait on the Father to provide the right opportunity to deal with the matter. And sometimes, you know, it's enormously frustrating, but it's necessary. Sometimes there are things that you see and you just wish you could do something, and you know that in the Father's wisdom you ought not to. You wait. You wait on the Father. And all of a sudden an opportunity crops up, a situation arises whereby finally you're able to deal with that situation. Might be some considerable time later, and it's handled beautifully and to the honour of the Father, because you learnt not to interfere at the wrong time. Yes, we've got to watch out for that spirit of meddling. What about verse 18? Now, this is a different person altogether. In fact, verses 18 and 19 need to be read together. This is not a meddler now. This is somebody else altogether. This is the jester in ecclesial life. The ecclesial jokester. Now, what does he do? Well, verse 18 says, as a madman who casteth firebrands, arrows, and death, so is the man that deceiveth his neighbour and saith, am I not in sport? The word madman here means to be insane. And the picture of verse 18 is this dramatic picture of the frenzied actions of someone who's, well, Moffat says it's like a lunatic who lets fly. Imagine this person running down the streets, you know, shooting off these firebrands and arrows, and people saying, get out, look, there's a madman in the streets, look out, and there's arrows going all over the place. As he comes laughing down the street, he's crazy. But this, verse 19 says, so is the man. So the man of verse 19 is compared with the insane destruction of the madman of verse 18. Now, what does the person of verse 19 do? Well, it says that they deceive their neighbour. Now, that word deceive is actually very interesting. In fact, every time that it's used in the same tense here as this proverb, it invariably relates to somebody who is passing themselves off as somebody else or as something else. It's the word used when Jacob wakes up in the morning and finds that he hasn't married Rachel at all. He's now married Leah. And he was deceived, Genesis 29:25. It's the word used in Joshua 9, verse 22, when Joshua finds he's been deceived by the men with the moldy bread and the rotten sandals, the Gibeonites. It's the word used in the 1st of Samuel 19 and verse 17, when the men of Saul burst in to take David and they find there's actually a teraphim in the bed. Remember? That wasn't David at all. Something passing itself off as David, but it wasn't really him. And the lesson is that every time you find this word used, what you'll find is that the joke or the deception is at the expense of the neighbour. I think that's the key idea here. The joke or the deception is always at the expense of the neighbour. He's the one who suffers. In other words, he's the one who gets hit by the arrow of verse 18. So you see, these are the sort of jokes that happen in ecclesial life about other brethren. Oh, ha, ha, ha. How funny they are. But it's never about the person who says the joke, is it? It's always about somebody else in the meeting. Jolly good fun. But it's not really funny, is it? Because it actually hurts people. Come have a look at Proverbs 10 and verse 23. This is the lesson, isn't it? Proverbs 10, verse 23. It is as sport to a fool to do mischief, but a man of understanding hath wisdom. Wise people don't joke like this in ecclesial life, because you see, the spirit of this person in Proverbs 26 and verses 18 and 19, well, let's come back to it and see what it says. I think the parallel of the idea is, Jerusalem Bible says, so is the man who lies to his neighbour and then says it was all a joke. He's like the madman in effect, isn't he? His effect is the same as the madman. He spreads hurt and damage by joking, just as the madman does by frenzy. They're both the same in effect. They cause hurt and damage. But I tell you what, the brother who jokes or jests concerning his neighbour is actually more responsible, isn't he? Because he's thoroughly aware of what he's doing. The madman isn't. He's insane. But the jester knows full well the damage that he causes. Sly wit and innuendo at the expense of others. This is the person who causes trouble in ecclesial life by mischief making. Ephesians chapter 5 has a good observation on this matter. Ephesians 5, 2 to 4. And walk in love, as Christ also hath loved us, and hath given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savour. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as becometh saints, neither filthiness nor foolish talking nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. Now that's not a good spirit in ecclesial life, and it doesn't help in any way to advance the cause of the truth. So back to Proverbs 26 then, and now verse 20. And what a marvellous proverb this is. Where no wood is, there the fire goeth out, so where there is no talebearer, the strife ceaseth. You know, I've always marvelled at this proverb since I was very much younger. And I think the thing that's marvellous about this proverb is, have you ever stared into the dying flames of a fire as it quietens down? It's a lovely thing, isn't it? Wonderful thing to watch. It's warm and comforting, and it's one of those inviting moments as a, you know, the dark of night creeps on and a fire slowly dies down before we go to bed. Would we have seen a spiritual lesson in that? And you see, the thing in life is that there are so many obvious, ordinary, everyday, commonplace things in life that we actually don't see spiritual lessons in. But the great wisdom of Solomon was that he saw spiritual lessons in ordinary things. So he says, where there is no wood, there the fire goeth out. Yes. So, where there is no talebearer, the strife ceaseth. Oh yes, now there's a powerful lesson drawn from an ordinary thing of daily life. Spiritual mindedness is all about being able to see spiritual lessons in ordinary life. Now here the strife is the fire. But the talebearer, of course, is the one who provides the fuel. Now what does a talebearer do? Well, they fan the flames of contention in ecclesial life by passing on details which become fuel to the fire. Actually, you know what the word talebearer really means in the Hebrew? It actually means the whisperer. The whisperer. You see, the thing with whisperers in ecclesial life is that they rarely talk to the person that they are talking about. They're always busy talking to others. You know, I've actually seen this happen in ecclesial life. Something will crop up, and after the meeting you'll see a couple of brethren disappear off into the corner and and then one of those will go, and you'll see one of those brethren go to another corner, and three people will go, and you'll see it move. You'll see the whisperer moving around the ecclesia, blowing on the flames, and before you know it you've got an ecclesial controversy on your hands because the talebearer's been busy adding fuel to the fire. And worse still, of course, those that are foolish enough to listen to the talebearer, who help also to ensure that the fire grows. So how do we quench the strife, says Solomon? Simple. Remove the whisperer, and the fire will go out. So how do we do that? Well, of course, we can't throw them out of the meeting, but we can stop the whisperer, him or her, in their tracks. We can ask them to produce their authority. We can face them with the subject of their tales. This is the lesson again of chapter 25, isn't it? Verses 8 to 10, about debating the cause with the neighbor yourself, privately. If people come to you with whispered gossip about other people, don't allow them to carry on speaking. Stop them in their tracks and say, I don't want to hear. Only then will the strife cease. And wise rulers know that not only are these people to be carefully watched, but they must never themselves indulge in such a fleshly evil. And quite different to that is the spirit of the man in verse 21, because verse 21 says, as coals are to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. So you see, this is actually fresh fuel being added to a fire that's dying down. And of course now it sparks and spits and roars afresh. The Jerusalem Bible, I think, captures the sense of the proverb when it says this, in a very cryptic way, charcoal for live embers, wood for fire, for kindling strife, a quarrelsome man. So you see, this is not the whisperer now. This is a person who's much more open in their actions. They don't need to go around secretly whispering things in the ecclesia. They love to bring it right out into the open. They love a discussion, except somehow it's never a discussion, it's always a battle. The truth's always about conflict. Everything must be debated in the spirit of argument. There must be confrontation. These are the diehards of ecclesial life. The battlers who won't have a bar of this or that or this group or that group or whatever. And the whole spirit is one of confrontation. Ever had those in ecclesial life? That's not the spirit of Christ, is it? Fierce words, heated arguments, abrasive behaviour. The word kindle here means to glow, to incite passion. You see, the spirit of this one, the spirit of their approach, is that they stir up feelings of discontent. They don't kindle love, they stir up strife. What do you think their motive is? Chapter 28, verse 25. The contentious man that kindles strife. What's their motive? Chapter 28, verse 25 says, he that is of a proud heart stirreth up strife, but he that putteth his trust in Yahweh shall be made fat. You see, this is the person who causes trouble in the ecclesia by being a quarreler on issues. And you know one of the remarkable things about, you see, by their fruits ye shall know them. You can always tell these people by their fruits. Their fruits are evident. They are never the champions of reconciliation. They are never the champions of healing and restoring and binding and bringing back together again. They're the people who delight in exploding apart things. And their fruits are such that, well, they're not known, really, for much success at all, apart from igniting controversy. Wise rulers know that that spirit never ever best advances the cause of the truth. It doesn't honour the Father, and it doesn't fulfil his purpose. So they watch for those people, and they avoid that spirit in their own lives. Verse 22, as our time has gone. The words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. Actually, the word wounds here, lacham, really actually means that the basic idea of the verb is to swallow greedily. Wounds is not a good translation. The word means to swallow greedily. And so other translations render as follows. RSV says the words of a whisperer are like delicious morsels. Jerusalem Bible says tasty morsels. NIV says choice morsels. Amplified Bible says dainty morsels. And you see, now we come to the real reason why whisperers in the ecclesia are so readily heard. Because you see, everybody loves to hear a little bit of gossip about somebody else, don't we? And instead of stopping the whisperer in their tracks, they say, Did you know about Brother Sam?
No. Really?
And they're like, you see, it's part of the perversity of the flesh, isn't it? That, you see, we love to see other people taken down, just a peg or two. Partly because that makes us feel perhaps a peg or two higher ourselves. It's part of the reasoning of the flesh, isn't it? The trouble is, you see what it says in the verse, the trouble is that when you've swallowed the dainty morsels, as Moffat says, swallowed and relished to the full, the problem is that they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. But you may like to take a note of Habakkuk chapter 3, verse 16, which shows that the innermost parts of the belly is really a synonym for the innermost thoughts and feelings of the person. And the trouble is, you see, that such delicious morsels enter into the innermost recesses and they deeply influence our personal attitudes to one another. And the great tragedy of this verse is that our attitude to another brother or another sister could be affected by a whispered morsel of gossip or scandal, once swallowed, once relished, never forgotten. And our thinking on that person is coloured because of the morsel we swallowed from the words of the whisperer. It's a terribly dangerous thing, isn't it, brother? You know how powerful whispers are? Chapter 16 of Proverbs and verse 28. I'll show you how powerful they are. Proverbs 16:28. A froward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chief friends. Even the closest and dearest of friends in the truth can be cut asunder by the words of such people in ecclesial life. Oh, how we should avoid that spirit. So there we have it. You see, the troublemakers of these verses. The meddler of verse 17, the jester of verse 18, the whisperer of verse 20, and the quarreller of verse 21. Those that are the troublemakers in ecclesial life. We need to be careful and aware of those dangers, not only in others, but especially in ourselves, so that we might in all that we do, as wise kings, advance best the cause of the truth.